Okay, good morning. It's Sarabatavis today. It's known as one of the Arbatomas. There are four fasts that are mentioned already by the Nevi'im, although there are six fasts that we observe during the year. One of them is Yom Kippur, which is Minat Torah. One of them is Tanis Esther, which is a later addition, as it only from the time of Purim, not from the time of the Nevi'im. Not much later, but not considered mentioned in the Nevi'im, the Ksuvim. And then we have the other four fasts, which are Tisha B'Av, Shivas B'Tammuz, Tzon Gedalia, and Asara B'Teves. And Tisha B'Av, we know, is the most stringent of them all. The other three are pretty much on the same level. And as it says in Halacha, these are days that we need to fast on them because of the Dvarim Haroim She'iru B'Hem, the bad things that happen. And as the Boski pointed out, it's a time of introspection and considering where we are and what we're doing, and we should improve ourselves as people and our service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As for Sarabatavis in particular, Boski bring down, it's the day that Nebuchadnezzar put a siege around the city of Yerushalayim, and that was really the beginning of the end, the beginning of the Korban, which led to later Shivas of the Tammuz, when they broke into Yerushalayim, the final destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, Tisha B'Av. Interesting, Shivas of the Tammuz is not Sarabatavis, aside, is the only fast that they can actually fall out on a Friday. The way our calendar works, the other ones can't fall on a Friday. That's not really relevant. It's a question if it falls on Shabbos, then we usually have a rule of things get brought earlier, whereas a fast day we push them off, generally speaking. Sarabatavis is an interesting one that can fall on a Friday, last year, 2 years ago. And then you have a Shaila how to get to Shabbos. But, okay, this is as an aside. So that was starting with some Inyan of the Yoma. And then we'll go back to what we were discussing. And that is, we were discussing cosmetics, manicures, and things like that. So something I wanted to get back to before we go on is we were talking about that applying makeup, cosmetics, and those type of things are problems of tzevea. Tzevea as in coloring. And although this is not the typical form of coloring, and therefore it is not the issue of daraisa, it's not the issue that is prescribed according to the Torah, but it is an issue de rabbanon, and any form of coloring which one intends on, one intends what one's doing for the sake of color is an issue of coloring on Shabbos. And therefore, although generally speaking, putting color onto one's skin is usually not considered as tzevea, because, you know, if you eat strawberries and you get your fingers all red, or you peel beets or something like that and you get all red, we don't say, oh, you're not allowed to deal with beets on Shabbos because you're going to get all red. Well, there you're not interested in the color. Whereas cosmetics, the whole purpose of cosmetics, you do want the color. You want the color to be applied, and therefore it is considered as tzevea on Shabbos, and is considered, and therefore considered also, discussed in Shulchan Aruch, that when color is done for the sake of the color, then even though it's not in the normal form of it, then we do say that it is considered awesome of Shabbos. Now, generally speaking, cosmetics, for the sake of the person using it, as well as the sake of the person who is producing it, the manufacturers, one of their desires is to design a cosmetic that lasts as long as possible. You know, it's, when you do something, it's annoying to have to reapply and reapply and reapply. Therefore, they're always looking for aces, ways of making things last a lot longer. And therefore, you see that the color has, although there's no permanence to it, which is one of the reasons why it's not the Oraisa, but we see that they try to make it permanent, which gives it explicit Rabbana. So the question is, with powders that are made differently than the regular types of cosmetics, what is the deal with that? So interesting, I saw a description. Coloring obviously means that we're adding a dye, we're adding some sort of color into a substance and making the substance a different color as a result. But it's not just that you make something look like a different color. What do I mean by that? If you take a red piece of paper and you put it on your white tablecloth, no one says, oh, you've now made your table red, and therefore you're over on surveyor because you've colored your white tablecloth. Everybody understands the logic behind that, that when you place something on top and it doesn't have any effect on what's underneath it, then there's no problem with surveyor whatsoever on Shabbos. So too, if you have a nice white or mica countertop and you spill some liquid on it that it has color in it, you don't say you've now colored your formica the countertop because you can wipe it down and it's white again. So it's just placing something on top. So what would be the din if you had some sort of cosmetic, you had a powder that you could apply that seems to be very superficial? So perhaps it should have the same type of thing, that is just something superficial. It's not binding. It doesn't bond with the skin. And therefore, it could be that it would be more. So I saw that it's a discussion. And there are those who want to say that there are special powders that are made that fall under this category of being an addition, a superficial addition onto the skin, and would be mutter. I only saw so far. I haven't been to everything on the subject yet, but it seems like also Rabbi Rivet writes in his book that it's a big machlokas, and he himself tends to side with the idea that not allowed. He said, generally speaking, it's very hard to find a powder that does not stick, does not bond, because the way they're made is that it has to stay. There's something. So a lot of them are oil-based, and the oil will then bind or bond with the skin. So he says, even those that are not oil-based do have something inside them that allow them to stay, otherwise they would just fall off. So that was, we should come up from that. If you're going with this idea that adding color is done for sake of color, and there is some sort of bond, some sort of adhesion, then you would say that by definition, and then say that is also, then by definition, that basically puts you in a situation where there's no such thing as Shabbos. I think what is generally known as Shabbos makeup is makeup that you apply before Shabbos and is much longer lasting than the regular, and therefore this is what you use on Shabbos, because regular makeup might last, say, half a day, and this will last the whole day. So that's why they call it Shabbos makeup, but as in makeup that can be applied on Shabbos. So apparently there are certain types of powders that some rabbis give heterim for, but on the general whole, there's no such thing as a Shabbos. That's what I seem to understand from what I've seen. Okay, so I think that takes us to the end of that section of cosmetics. I see the part I thought we hadn't done, but we did talk about nails last week, about coloring them, not cutting them, and you say break off, etc. Continue to the next section. The next section is care of clothing on Shabbos. And obviously the first thing that can when it comes to clothing and halachos on Shabbos is cleaning them. The cleaning process, we know, is one of the lametes halachos. It's called melabin, something white. Chazal have defined it as a three-stage process. And each stage has its own issur. The number one stage would be to soak the garment. If you have a material and you place it in water, I will say, just for the sake of understanding, an absorbent material, because if you would use a piece of plastic, you put it into, if you had a solid piece of plastic, polyester fibers, that's considered material. Even though when it comes to Hilchos Tzitzis, there are opinions that hold that since polyester essentially is plastic, it's just cut into very, very fine fibers and woven into thread and then made into garments, but a leather garment is Pata from Tzitzis, or a solid garment that's made of a single piece, like a sheet of plastic. If you had a sheet of plastic that was made as a garment, that would also be Pata from Tzitzis. Tzitzis has to be on a beged. So there are those who hold, not like this, but there are those who hold, that nylon polyester material is also a material that is part of the city. But when it comes to Shabbos, it's not a question of where it came from, it's a question of does it absorb. So leather, there's leather you can put into water, because it's not that type of absorbent material. There's no issur shriya on leather. But there is, on any other material, there's an issur shriya. Shriya is soaking. So the number one stage in cleaning garments of Shabbos is the issur of shriya. The number two stage of cleaning is when you do the rubbing, the wringing, the scrubbing, the rubbing the garment against itself or against something else, or against the block, against the board, against the stone, against the soap, whatever it is. That's number two. And number three is removing the liquid by squeezing, whether you shake the garment and get the liquid out, or whether you actually wring the garment to get the liquid out is stage number three. Essentially, the way we look at cleaning garments is that when the garment is dirty, it is not considered usable. And once you've done the malacha, then it becomes usable, becomes fresh again, becomes like a new garment. So if something becomes unusable because of the fact that it's totally wet, and then you squeeze it out, so that's not only that does that be part of the cleaning process, now become wearable, so that is included in the issue of labing or kvisa, which is washing clothing on Shabbos. Now, there is going to be, we'll get to a discussion as to when you soak things, what about if your liquid is dirty, therefore it's not going to clean the garment, in fact it's going to make the garment dirtier, and what about if the garment was clean to start with, is there a problem of shriya? So on the first one, when the liquid is dirty, then we say that there's no problem of soaking something over there from the point of view of kvisa, because yuzicha, no one's going to say that you're actually cleaning such a garment. You take a garment and you dip it into Coca-Cola, no one has a thought that it's going to come up clean. There's a separate problem. There's a xera. If you put something into liquid, then our reaction usually is that you're going to squeeze it out. So we worry this time it's not a daraisa, it's not a part of the cleaning process, which is a separate issue that you might come to squeeze it out. So that would make a difference if you have a spill on the floor. You spill some liquid that's not clean, it's on the floor. So taking a piece of material, shmata or a rag, and throwing it on the floor, so you're absorbing this liquid into the rag, and then you're going to squeeze the rag out. So that's a separate problem. That's a problem of dosh. That's not a problem of kvisa. Because kvisa is when you clean it, so you're not really cleaning it. But here's a separate problem that you're taking a liquid out of a solid, and it's similar to like squeezing fruit, and therefore we say it's a problem of dosh. Now, so we see that squeezing has a double issue to it. On the one hand, squeezing can be a step in the process of cleaning, and can also be a problem of dosh. So to get a piece of material wet on Shabbos on purpose is Chazal have acid it because we're afraid that a person might have to squeeze it. So if you do have a spill on the floor, there's only two ways to clean it up. And that is either, which really is one and the same, either you use a rag, which you don't care that it stays wet, therefore it's not your automatic reaction to squeeze it out, or, for that matter, you use disposable stuff, it's the same thing. Basically, as I said, it's one and the same. You're not interested, then something you're not going to use again, and therefore you're not going to squeeze it. So if you have to clean up a spill, you've got to make sure you use something that you're not muckbed, that it stays wet, and then you can clean up the spill. But that is when the liquid is dirty. When the liquid is clean, so then you can't, then you have other problems to worry about. That soaking something is already the stage one of cleaning and is also in and of itself, and therefore you can't put things into water. So that would mean if you have soiled garments, particularly say from children, you're afraid of a stain, you want to just throw it into water and then wash it on Motzei Shabbos. So that would also be a problem. You can't put something into water to soak and just for later. And a secondary issue that comes through kvisa, that comes through as a result of the issue of laundering on Shabbos, is the fact that we're not allowed to hang laundry on Shabbos. In and of itself, hanging laundry on Shabbos is not asur. It's nothing wrong with taking something and putting it outside and letting the weather take care of it. But it's a marisayin, and marisayin is that people think that you've done something and you're not allowed to behave in a way that leads people to done something that's asur. Now there's a difference between whether the marisayin is on a daraisa or a rabbana. If you have a marisayin on daraisa, meaning you do something which is permissible, but as a result of what you did, it might appear to others that you perhaps got here because you did something which was also min ha-Torah. So then It is asked to do it, and not only is it asked to do it, but asked to do it afilu b'chadri chadorim, even if you find a private place to do it, and there, where no one can see what you're doing. Once Chazal made it there, it's also replied everywhere, even in private. So hanging up wet clothing, it doesn't definitely have to be laundry. It's even something that you will walk, your coat that you walk through the rain with. Now your coat is dripping and you want to hang it up to dry. So you're not allowed to hang it up in the normal place where you'll hang something to dry. You can't hang it on the line. You can hang it somewhere else because that doesn't look like if you freshly laundered it. But hanging up a wet garment with it, whether it was came out of the, whether you left something lying around that was wet, or whether you got wet on Shabbos, so that is a problem. You're not allowed to hang it up on Shabbos. Separate issue that's also to be taken into account with wet garments is that something that is wet on Shabbos is mukzer because of Shema Yisra. You can't squeeze it, like we said. You can't use a rag to pick up dirty liquid, even though there's no problem with visa, there's no problem with cleaning, but there is a problem of that you might come to squeeze it out. And therefore that's something that we worried about all the time, and therefore wet clothing that was washed and is still wet becomes mukta. Something which became wet on Shabbos, like clothing that you wear and you walk through the rain, we say does not become mukta at that because of the rain. And you can actually go, you came in from the rain with your coat, hang it somewhere, as long as it's not on the washing line. But you can hang it somewhere to let it dry, and then it's until then not mukta. And then once it dries, it's for sure not mukta. If you have wet laundry that you hung up on a Friday, and when Ben Hashmoshes came, that means when the sun went down, now you've got the next 15 minutes from when the sun went down to what it's the chavim. Might be a little bit longer, but let's call it from sundown. So something which was wet Ben Hashmoshes, so then you have a rule, Migdis Katsole, the Ben Hashmoshes is Katsole Kula Yoima. Something which is mukta during Ben Hashmoshes will be mukta for the whole Shabbos if its status changed when Shabbos, after Shabbos came in. So, if you have dry laundry hanging on the line and you forgot to take it in, you could take it in on Shabbos. Not that this is the thing that you should be doing on Shabbos, and then sorting it out and folding it and putting it in the various places, but you need a particular item of clothing which you washed and you left it on the line. And when Shabbos came, you realized you need this item of clothing when it's on the line. If it was dry when Shabbos came in, so it's not mukta, you can take it off the line. The same thing, the issur of hanging clothing on the line that we were discussing is only an issur of the actual hanging. The maisa hanging, the maisa of putting the clothing onto the line is what is the maris ayin, that a person thinks you might have freshly laundered the clothing now. However, the fact that the laundry hangs out is not a problem. You had it hanging from before and you just left it, that's not a problem with Shabbos. So again, if you have clothing that was on the line that was dry, so then you can take it off the line on Shabbos. You need it on Shabbos, you can take it on Shabbos. But if when Shabbos came in, the clothing was still wet, so then it's mukta. And once it's mukta when Shabbos came in, it's mukta even after it dries. That actually is a rule because something which is mukta ben hashmoshes will be mukta for the whole Shabbos. But that does not apply to something which became mukta on Shabbos, which is interesting. So I'll give you an example. Say you had clothing on the line, and that clothing dried. It was dry when Shabbos came in. Now, the status of the clothing is not mukta because the clothing is dry. Sometimes during the night, it rains. Now it rains, the clothing gets soaking wet. At that moment, the clothing is mukta. It became mukta again because now you cannot handle it because of the zera. You might come to squeeze it, so therefore Chazal thought that it's mukta. Then the next morning, the sun comes up and shines all over your clothing and dries it again. So here you have an interesting case, is that once it dries the second time, it's no longer mukta anymore. Because even though it went through a stage where it was wet and became mukta, but that was not during Ben Hashmoshes. We look at its status, what was it Ben Hashmoshes? If when Shabbos came in it was wet, then it's mukta for the whole Shabbos. Irrelevant of whether it's dry or wet, that's it. It now gets the status of mukta and stays that way till Moitzei Shabbos. But if when Shabbos came in it was dry and was not mukta, So then, even if something happened to it on Shabbos, it can revert back to its original status afterwards. So again, it can, if it was dry when Friday night came in, it then rained and got wet. And while it's wet, it's considered muktzah. And then when it dried, it becomes back to its original status, which is not muktzah. There's another example given of this is a candle. A candle that is not lit is a klisha melachta le'isur. It's a form of muktzah that you can move it to a kufa mekoyma if you need its place or you need to use it. Then you're allowed to use it, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. You can't move it without any reason. You can't move it for just to protect it from something. But if it's something that you need, so you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. If the candle is lit and there's a fire burning in it, so then it's muktzah machmas isur. There's a fire on it. And then you can't move it at all. For no excuse. No reason. You may not move it whatsoever on Shabbos. So what happens if you have a candle that was not burning on Shabbos, and then for some reason the candle was lit during Shabbos, and then it went out again? Now, what's the status of the candle after it went out? The example given in the poskim is if you have an emergency. You have an emergency and Hatzalah comes running and they need your help and it's dark and they need light, so they light a candle and then the emergency passes. So if at the time that they light the candle when there's an emergency, so that you can't say it's muktzah, everything's muktzah for the sake of the emergency. So they needed to light a candle, then they can move the candle, no problem. But say the patient was either recovered, the emergency was taken care of, or it was a woman that needed to give birth, she's now given birth, or whatever it is, the sun came up and they didn't need the candle anymore, you get to a state where they don't need the candle. Once they don't need the candle anymore, so then it becomes also, then it becomes muktzah, machmas isur. So you have an example of a candle that when Shabbos came in, there was no fire in it. So it would be a klisha melachta le'isur. Sometime during Shabbos, it had a fire in it. The example I gave was they lit it for Hatzalah, and then the emergency passed. So now it was be'isur. And then the candle went out afterwards. The fuel was finished. You left just with a candle, or it blew up, whatever it may be. Now, what is the din? So we say, because it was ben hashmoshes, it was not the full, the most serious type of muktzah, so now it reverts back to what it was, ben hashmoshes. So true, a candle is a form of muktzah, but there's a difference between a klisha melachta le'isur and something which is muktzah machmas isur itself. That means when it has a fire in it. When it has the fire on it, you can't move it at all, even so kufa mekoymoi. Whereas a klisha melachta le'isur, a kli itself can be moved, machmas kufa machmas ekoymoi for use of itself or its place. So there you have an example, another example of something that we just said. If the laundry was dry when Shabbos came in and it got wet during the night and then it dried, so it reverts back to its original status because ben hashmoshes it was dry. If ben hashmoshes was wet, even if it dried immediately after, nevertheless it would be considered as muktzah because it came into Shabbos that way. So we'll go more into laundering and washing clothing next week, and we're going to hold it there for this week. Wishing everybody a successful fast. For those who are fasting, for those who are not, it should be a day of obviously success and a wonderful week.
Amen. Thank you.